Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, June 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Do lobsters scream when you boil them? Does baking soda remove odors from your refrigerator? What about that 5-second rule? What if you drop your sandwich on the floor? If you pick it up within 5 seconds, is it all right? And what about oysters? Hey, nudge, nudge. Well, to help us bust all these cooking myths and many more, we welcome back renowned cookbook author Bruce Weinstein to the program, and we want to hear from you. What culinary myths have you always wondered about? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You know, barring any press conferences, we'll have one heck of a show. And let's just plan ahead and pretend that we will have a full show here, and there'll be no political brouhaha. Vox Pop begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday today, and we will be debunking culinary myths with cookbook author Bruce Weinstein today. Working with fellow Food Friday favorite Mark Scarborough, Bruce has published about 30 cookbooks in 16 years. That's more than 12,000 original recipes tested and written, a million hours at the table, a billion hours on the cross trainer. One of their books is Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them, and 100 Other Culinary Myths. Bruce and Mark also write a monthly column on WeightWatchers.com, contribute regularly to Fine Cooking Magazine and Cooking Light, and they've got a podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Bruce Weinstein, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray, good to be here.
Nice to have you here, and this is always fun when we get to bust a few myths here on the program.
And when I get to bring you food.
This is really cool. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, but again, it's 800-348-2551. You know, I got a program note. I have to say it. President Trump scheduled to hold a joint news conference with Romania's president this afternoon.
It's a myth.
It's a fake press conference. We'll find out. It is expected that the president will respond to yesterday's Senate testimony by former FBI Director James Comey. This news conference currently scheduled for 2:45. We will carry it live, which means we may be breaking from this program. However, if history dictates, chances are it will not happen until after the program is over.
Okay.
So we'll knock wood. But if it does happen, we will take a quick break. But our number here is 800-348-2551. And before we get going with myths today, Bruce, what are you guys working on now?
We got a book coming out in the fall called All-Time Favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. And you just wait till we show up here with some sheet cakes for you guys.
That'll be great. Now, you don't make this in a blender.
We did make cakes from the blender, but that was our turbo blender dessert book.
Which was crazy.
Yeah, it was really crazy. Cool. You know? Now, but the sheet cake and slab pie book will be out in October. We'll be on QVC with that in September, which we're very excited about.
So that's must-see TV when you guys are on QVC.
Well, it's really exciting. You know, when you, because you got the little earpiece in and they're telling you how many, you know, people are on the line buying your book. And
so the producer's in your ear saying that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, you walk in the green room and you can see on the computer like how many are in the warehouse. You
right.
say, oh, God, they got 17,000 copies. And we're, you know.
Is that how it works?
How can you possibly sell that many? And then you're on the air for 3 minutes and like, we're sold out. Thanks, boys.
You're kidding me. And this is done out of somebody's garage?
No. Oh, the studios are enormous.
Really?
Yeah. And you walk in and there are TV screens showing you what's on QVC, Israel, China, Australia, Japan. And it's like they're just selling stuff over the world.
This is amazing.
24 hours a day.
Where are the headquarters?
In Westchester, Pennsylvania. It's west of Philadelphia.
This is amazing.
It's crazy.
East of Eden, west of Philadelphia. And you've met the dump cake lady?
No,
Mitchell. You met Kathy Mitchell?
Oh, I actually haven't met her.
Big fan.
Yeah, yeah. But the Dump Cake book, they were published by the same people who published our Sheet Cakes and Slab Pie books and our A La Mode books.
So, yeah. Do you ever duke it out with her?
Nah.
No.
You know, when you go someplace where people want to sell tens of thousands of copies of your book, all you do is smile and say thank you.
This is amazing. And you probably have a couple of cocktails beforehand, right?
Oh.
Yeah. No comment. Bruce Weinstein is our guest today. We're going to bust some myths on the program on a Food Friday. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And you wrote the book, Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them.
Well, and you got to get the subtitle in there. And 100 Other Myths, because lobsters don't scream. When you boil them, they don't have vocal cords. Mm-hmm. They can't scream. They don't have lungs. There's no air.
Where did it come from? Where did the myth come from?
First of all, they do. There can be a noise. When you put lobster in boiling water, you might hear a high-pitched sound, and that would be air escaping from the shell.
Yeah.
So some people say, well, that's them screaming. Well, they're not screaming. That's just air coming out of the shell. You know, you can get into the deeper conversation of whether it's right or wrong to dispatch an animal so you can eat protein.
We've had that conversation on Food Friday.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're going to eat protein, I think you have to understand that something was dispatched for you to eat it. But I can guarantee you a lobster does not scream. Okay. No matter what else happens, it doesn't scream.
All right. You brought marshmallows, and these are homemade marshmallows.
I made these
this morning.
And so, Ray, you had one.
Fantastic.
And what is the first thing I asked you? I said, what do you think? You don't know anything about marshmallows.
No.
You don't know much about cooking.
Well, you got that. You've heard the show.
So I've asked you, what do you think's in them? And what would you said to me?
Eggs.
Egg whites.
Yeah.
Because they look like that. It's amazing how many people think marshmallows are made with egg whites. Basically, it's gelatin and sugar. That's sugar jello.
So how long does it take to make a marshmallow from scratch? I don't think most people just buy a bag of marshmallows and you're good to go.
But there's no
These
comparison.
Are a lot better.
There's no comparison. Basically, you just take unflavored gelatin and you soak it in water, and then you boil up a sugar syrup till it's at, in the technical term, the soft ball stage, which is 240 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Because if you were to take a little...
It won't boil?
It boils, yeah. It's hot.
But it'll get hotter than boiling.
Yeah, sugar. It will keep getting hotter. And the hotter it gets, it changes its properties. So at 240, if you took a little bit of it and put it in cold water, you could form a soft ball out of it.
How about that?
If you go a little higher, you get to the hard ball stage. Then you get to the soft crack stage, and then you get to the hard crack stage, which is like hard candy.
So like rock candy.
Mm-hmm. So sugar changes. So you cook this to 240 degrees, and you slowly drizzle it into a stand mixer, beating that gelatin. And it triples in volume.
Just a minute. Now, the gelatin, are you making this like gelatin with boiling water, or is this just room temperature?
Just soak the gelatin in about... I had, for this batch, there were 6 packages of gelatin and 1.5 cups of water.
Wow.
And you just let that soften, and then you beat the hot burning sugar syrup into it.
Wow.
And it cools in the mixer about 10 minutes, and it triples in volume. You spread it into an oil tray, and you let it set.
It's perfect. And this is so much better than the commercially made.
Oh, they're so good. Well,
they're
chewy.
Okay.
And, yeah, I love homemade marshmallows. So this leads me into the next myth I have.
And this is a
great one. It's all about gelatin.
And I know gelatin is made from bones and hoofs and such.
Well,
no.
Yes and no.
Oh,
mostly
really?
No.
Really? All right.
If
fine.
You take bones and hooves and boil them in your pot, like you put chicken feet. My grandmother always put chicken feet in chicken soup.
Yeah.
Because it there's a lot of collagen, there's a lot of cartilage that melts, mm-hmm. and it creates a gelatin in the soup. They get thick. But commercial gelatin, you're not going to get enough out of bones and hooves. So commercial gelatin is made from the hide.
You're kidding me. Mm-mm. The same thing they make baseball gloves out of.
It's made from skin.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
And so
it's all collagen. Skin, you know, I talk about how skin sags, they do collagen injections. It's all collagen. And so by processing it just right, that's how gelatin. So
commercially made gelatin
is made from hide.
Has it always been this way?
Well.
Do you know the history of gelatin, Bruce Weinstein?
Well, not really.
All right.
But I know how to use it, and I know how to make fantastic marshmallows.
Yeah, you did good. That was great. Our number here on Food Friday is 800-348-2551. A reminder, 2:45 is the scheduled start time for President Trump's press conference with the president of Romania. He is expected, not the president of Romania, to respond to yesterday's Senate testimony by former FBI Director Jim Comey. And we will have that for you if and when it happens during this program. If it's afterwards, you know, we'll just take it afterwards.
He might respond. Who knows?
The Romanian guy?
Why not?
We'll find out. You know what? His name, I didn't even print it out. I figured I would screw it up so badly. Suffice to say, it's the Romanian president. Labeling on chicken. Now, what myths are involved with that?
Well, the biggest myth with that are two words, free range.
Well, I've heard that.
Yeah, so if you go to buy a piece of chicken and you see the words free range on the label, what are you going to assume?
Well, they're just running around in somebody's backyard.
Sounds nice.
Until the chickens die.
Well, again, you want to eat animal protein, something's going to be dispatched.
Okay.
But free range, all it means from the USDA is that the developers, I don't want to call them farmers. They're just sort of like the
industrial concerns.
Yeah, the chicken producers.
Yeah.
Give the chickens have some access to outdoors. So all that can mean, let's say you have a football field size barn.
Right.
You have a little 2-foot square door at the end of one end of it. That counts as free range. Because there is supposedly access to go. So how do you get around this? Look, first of all, that doesn't matter to everyone. Not everyone is concerned that their chickens are free range.
Right.
It's just, and there's no judgment on whether you're concerned or not. That's great. If you're concerned, there are ways around it. If you are concerned, find a local farmer's market. Even in cities, there are farmer's markets. And there are people who are coming in with true free range chickens, with chickens they've raised that are out. So you can find them that way. Ask questions. If you go into your grocery store, whether it's a Whole Foods or whether it's just Stop and Shop, talk to the guy in the meat department. Ask them. They'll have some answers. They may not have all the answers. And if it doesn't matter to you, if eating organic, and organic's another whole labeling thing, if eating organic or eating free range is not important to you, that's fine. Then buy whatever's on sale.
Now, the free range bit, mm-hmm. is this a... Do people buy free range for an assumed increase in quality, or is it just because the chicken had a better life up until the very end?
I think people do for both. I think a lot of people look at it as, well, that means they had a better quality of life. And I think it's important that food animals have a good quality of life.
Yeah.
I mean, they should be treated humanely. And if they have a better quality of life, they're, you know, one thing leads to another, that you would think it would be healthier. And for the most part, it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, animals that are not as stressed are healthy.
Oh, you make a point. Bruce Weinstein is our guest. We talk culinary myths today on Food Friday. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. A little later in the program, Bruce will be responding to the testimony from former FBI Director James Comey. So listen for that.
Support for WAMC comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, announcing Outdoor Market on River Street, featuring farm fresh produce and handmade goods every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. TroyMarket.org. Field Goods, local produce from the Hudson Valley, delivered weekly to workplace and community locations, helping people change the way they eat while supporting small, sustainable farms. Field-goods.com. Big Elm Brewing at 65 Silver Street in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Tap room open Thursdays through Saturdays, 12 to 6 p.m. BigElmBrewing.com. Silver Bay YMCA Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, New York. Open to all for family reunions, conferences, and personal retreats. SilverBay.org. And Big Y, family-owned and operated market with 5 locations in the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com.
Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff here, and today joined by Bruce Weinstein, and the new book that is not out yet is called?
All-Time Favorite Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies.
Note to producer Jim Lavoulis. Get these guys on for that one. And a couple of emails came in before we get to the phones here, and then we'll get to more myths. This one came in from Eliza, who says, does salted water boil faster?
Well, a lot of people think that, but actually salt raises the boiling point of water, so it actually boils slower. It takes longer. Now, first of all, the amount of salt you might add, like if you're going to salt pasta water, putting even a small handful of kosher salt in a 7-quart pot of water is barely going to affect the boiling point at all. But if you take a pot of seawater and a pot of tap water, the tap water will boil faster because once you dissolve the salt in it, you raise the boiling point. and you lower the freezing point.
Oh, very interesting. Mm-hmm. So the salt, now again, my cooking skills are legendary, but I do attempt to make pasta, and I'm told by my wife to put salt in.
Because it makes the pasta taste better.
So that's all it's for. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with
the pasta will absorb.
What about the oil? I put a little oil in there, too.
Not necessary.
Okay.
Salt, yes. Oil, no.
All right. This is from John in Pittsfield. The subject heading, fish smell on utensils. Growing up, my mother taught us to first rinse utensils and dishes used to cook fish in cold water. She said that the cold water removed the fish smell. To this day, I still do it. I'm now 68. Is this a myth or not?
I've actually never heard that one.
I'll give you the email then.
No, I believe you. I've actually never heard that one. But I will tell you that when things retain the cooking smells and cooking odors, whether it's from fish or from curries or from strong herbs and spices, I tend to soak them in water with a little baking soda. That will help to get rid of some of that.
Beforehand?
No, afterwards.
All right, of course.
And some good scrubbing. Just clean it.
Yeah.
Just a good cleaning. It utensils, if you're using plastic utensils, plastic will tend to hold on to smells longer. So he's probably talking about plastic utensils here. Stainless steel utensil, a spoon or a spatula is not going to have any odors.
But John's email says, my mother taught us to first rinse the utensils and dishes before cooking the fish.
Before.
In cold water.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something about, I don't know. I've never heard that.
All right. Well, you're going to save that. And if
I
you find out,
that.
You can email John.
All right.
One more from your list here. And we have a long list. And then we'll get to the phones.
Okay.
800-348-2551. From page 53 of the book, white wine has less alcohol and fewer calories than red.
I've heard that so many times that it's like, I'm amazed. You know,
yeah.
So I say, you know, you go to a cocktail party or you go to a bar with friends and someone says, oh, get me white wine. I'm on a diet.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is
There's
that
no difference?
Mean? Look, the amount of calories that is in the wine is based on how much residual sugar is in the wine, how sweet the wine is.
Yeah.
And the ethanol, the alcohol itself, has calories, right? So alcohol content ranges in wines from about 10% to 14%. And yes, there are some, you know, German Rieslings and Vouvrays and a host of rosés that have 10%, so a little bit less alcohol in it. But many, many, many white wines have 12.5%. You know, Gruner, Veltliners, white Bordeaux, white Burgundies are all coming in about 12.5%, which is where red wines are. And then you tend to get 14% alcohol in California Chardonnays and Sauternes. So these are all white wines. And champagne has a really high calorie count because there's a lot of extra sugar in it. So white is not because you're on a diet. Drink white wine because you like white wine.
But as a rule of thumb, more alcohol means more calories?
Well, it can mean more calories because alcohol has calories.
Yeah.
But if a wine has less sugar but more alcohol, then it balances out. So you want its calories, how sweet the wine is, how much residual sugar brings the calories up, and how much alcohol brings the calories up.
You know, I don't go to too many, I don't get out much, but and it shows. But I've heard people say, well, get me vodka, I'm on a diet.
Well, because there's less sugar, there is ethanol. Ethanol is the alcohol, and that has calories. But you're not going, wine has more sugar in it. Definitely, than vodka.
Will vodka have less calories than, say, scotch or bourbon, which would be more my drink of choice?
Not necessarily. They're probably fairly equal. Some of those drinks are sweeter than others, like rum is sweeter than vodka. But I don't think the calorie count of the strain, and if someone is out there looking it up or knows and I'm completely off base, let me know.
Okay.
But I think they're fairly equivalent. But leads me into what you just said. The next myth I want to talk about, and I've heard this 1,000 times too.
And what is that?
If you mix your alcohols, you'll get drunker.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that. Sure. Or you hear the beer before liquor, never been sicker.
Okay, but that's the key word, sick. Getting sick is not the same as getting drunk.
Okay.
Right?
Well, it can be for some. Believe me.
So if you have, you know, 3 shots of tequila followed by 3 shots of vodka followed by 3 shots of bourbon—
Good Lord.
You're going to be really, really drunk.
Yes.
That's a lot of alcohol.
Right you are.
Now,
I see Zach nodding.
You might also get kind of sick because you're mixing all sorts of things, not just ethanol. every one of those alcoholic beverages has a distinct taste because of what's in it.
Yeah.
It's not just alcohol. It's a lot of other flavorings, even natural flavorings. It comes out of the still with all sorts of things that give it its distinctive taste. And when you start to mix all of those other things, you could start to get sick. The reason people think they get drunker when they mix it is because they drink drinks like a Long Island iced tea.
Yeah.
And it's got 17 shots of different things in it.
Right.
So yeah, you're drunker, but you're also sicker.
I have a lot of questions about this, but I think we should get to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go over to Zem in, I hope I have that right, Zem in Northampton. You're on.
Zem, yes.
You're on.
You got it. My question has to do with olive oil.
Okay.
I've been told by my parents and a number of other people that a really good olive oil doesn't have a burn when it goes down. And I've had really good fresh olive oil that burns as it goes down. So my question then is it fresher if it doesn't have a burn, or is that a myth?
Okay, it shouldn't have anything to do with the freshness of it. What happens to old oils and olive oil or any oil is as it gets older, it can become rancid.
Yeah.
And when a rancid fat has a very distinctive paint-like smell and taste to me, it's not much of a burn. Olive oils are like wines in that depending upon the olive it comes from, depending upon the regions the olive was grown, you get a lot of different flavors going on. There can be olive oils that taste like black pepper and have peppery qualities, which you might feel as a burn. There are olive oils that are buttery and flowery. There are ones that are herbally and then ones that taste like grass. So it's you're talking about a quality of the oil in terms of its flavor compounds that are giving you that sensation. So if you like that, then you should continue to look for oils that have that peppery quality. But it's not a matter of being fresher. It's just a matter of the varietal.
Okay. Jim, thank you for that one. 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday, and Bruce Weinstein is here. Let's go to Sarah in Beckett, Mass. Sarah, you're on.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So, plant-based, I have used agar, which is a sea vegetable, to make things gel. And it's a Japanese sea vegetable, which I am now opposed to using. So there's something called Irish moss, but I don't know how to use it. Does Bruce have any experience with Irish moss?
Irish spring or Irish moss?
I mean,
I'm talking about
agar. Agar is a seaweed derivative that is a gelatin that you said you don't want to use anymore. I have actually never used Irish moss. I've heard of it. I've heard of using it as a gelling agent and a thickener, but I haven't used it. I'm not sure that all agar comes from Japan. So you might want to check on that, and you might be able to find other places.
Atlantic Ocean-based agar.
Check that out.
All right, thanks, Sarah. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number on this Food Friday. And let's see, how about the five-second rule, man?
Okay, so let's say we got a lovely little Petri dish full of bacteria right here. And if I drop a potato chip on there and count to five, would you eat it?
Of course not.
Well, and why wouldn't you eat it?
It's going to get bacteria on it.
There you go. Bacteria don't keep stopwatches. They don't wait 5 seconds and go, okay, guys, wait. Okay, now jump on the potato chip.
But I would also say this, that there's probably enough bacteria on your counter or table that it wouldn't make much of a difference anyway.
Well,
then you would never eat anything unless you... You know what I mean?
Yeah. Tests were done for these things where they would swab surfaces with salmonella and then drop it on. You know, if your counters are swarming with salmonella, then you've got other problems than worrying about 5 seconds. You need to keep a cleaner kitchen. But the point is, if you drop a sandwich out on the street, you shouldn't pick it up and eat it.
Okay.
Okay. Even if you picked it up in 3 seconds, you shouldn't pick it up.
This is not a myth. This is just
common sense.
I mean, but most people would.
There are people who've made careers out of
the five-second rule.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm perplexed. All right, let's go back to the phones. Renee in Campbell Hall. Renee, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. When exactly do you cover something on the stove when you're cooking it? For instance, if you want to caramelize onions and garlic, but I'm trying to use a low-fat method, so just kind of spraying the pan with olive oil, then you start sautéing the onions. Mm-hmm. Do you cover the pot, the pan then to keep the steam in there to help them reduce, or do you not cover a pan in that situation?
Well, personally, my favorite way to caramelize onions, even when I'm not going low-fat, and I tend not to go low-fat with caramelized onions, is I go a few minutes without covering it first, just to get it hot and get the sizzling happening. And then I cover it and I put the heat down really low. And I let the steam build up and really break them down. And then after about 20 minutes, I uncover it, turn the heat back up to a medium, and then stir and stir maybe another half an hour at that point to evaporate any liquid that's come out and to beautifully caramelize them.
Takes a long time.
Yo, good caramelized onions could take an hour,
Okay.
If not longer.
Sounds delicious. And then why can't you cover a pot if you're boiling, let's say, spaghetti, and you're trying to get the water up to a higher temperature faster after you've added in the cold spaghetti? So you have, you know, hard spaghetti in the pot. Why does everybody leave the pot open?
Okay, great question.
That is a good question. Because if you cover a pot while the water's boiling, steam builds up and it starts to spew out the edges, and you have carbohydrate in that pasta. So that's made with flour. So you're going to have starches coming out in that water, and it's going to start to spew out from under the lid and make a huge mess on your stove.
But then you just have to turn the gas lower. Well, then you don't use as much fuel.
Well, you know, you want to keep the flame high because you want that pasta rolling around in the water. So you could put your lid back on for 2 minutes until that water starts to come back to a boil, but then take it off to boil it because you want a good rolling boil.
All right, Renee, thank you. Over to Diana in Saugerties. Diana, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Bruce. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am back to the eggs. I've heard two different things, and I'm trying to figure out the truth of the color of the yolk. Now, one school of thought is that it means it's more nutrition in there, and, you know, you got to get the dark orange yolks are better nutrition. And I've heard other things saying, well, you just feed them like hibiscus flowers, or, you know, it's what they eat just makes the color. Do you happen to know which is the truth?
What chickens eat affects the color and the flavor of the yolk. So, which is why when you buy farmed eggs, the yolks are often very pale, very, very pale yellow, because those chickens are not eating insects, they're not eating flowers, they're not outside eating things chickens would have eaten. When you buy farmed eggs where they're feeding the chickens extra stuff, the yolks get darker. When you go to a farmer's market and you buy eggs from chickens that live outside and eat lots of flowers and worms and grubs, well, the yolks get much darker. You know, I once...
They're very orange.
Yeah, I once rented a house in northern Vermont for the summer, and there was a guy that has a strawberry farm down the road from this house, and he had chickens, and every morning he would throw the rotting strawberries that he couldn't sell to the chickens.
Huh.
And for the 3 weeks that the strawberries were in season, his yolks were sunset orange.
Well, I'll be darned.
And they had they even had a hint of a strawberry flavor, those chickens.
You think that was psychological on your part, though?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Well, maybe the taste was, but the color wasn't.
Okay.
That was amazing. They were the sunset orange color from all the strawberries.
So I guess it's both then.
It is a little bit. About it. What they eat goes into their eggs. It's we're going back to that organic-y thing. What animals eat affects their meat and their eggs and everything about them. So you want to enjoy protein that has had a good life with a good diet.
Yeah.
Diana, thanks a lot for the call. Now, remember, we are expecting President Trump to hold a joint news conference with Romania's president this afternoon. It is supposed to be at 2:45. We have one of the news channels up here in the studio. Looks like they're getting ready. So we will carry that live when it happens. In the meantime, it's Food Friday with Bruce Weinstein, who has another book coming out soon. And the book is...
All-time favorite, sheet cakes and slab pies.
Yeah.
Everything baked in an 18 by 13 pan. everything from baklavas to Texas sheet cakes to,
that's awesome. And I hope it'll be lavishly illustrated,
There are tons of beautiful photographs.
Today's show, and we've done this once or twice with Bruce and Mark, we talk about culinary myths. And the book is Lobsters Scream When You Boil Them and 100 Other Myths About Food and Cooking, page 268. Or 286, I should say. Good heavens, where did you come up with this one? In the Middle Ages, people used honey and spices to cover the taste of rotted meat.
God, we were all taught that. You weren't taught that in elementary school?
I'm in radio. I wasn't really taught that much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was kind of like the thing. They'd be like, oh, yeah, well, they just used a lot of honey and spices. They used a lot of honey because it was available to cook with. But it wasn't to cover the taste of rotted. No, they didn't have refrigeration, and meat rotted. You know what happened when meat rotted? They didn't eat it.
Yeah.
Because if they ate rotted meat, they would have died, and we wouldn't all be here.
You make a
point. So honey was used a lot in cooking, and for preserving, because honey is an amazing product in that it can seal something airtight.
Yep.
And it's hydrophilic. There's no water. It's very low moisture, and it sucks moisture out of things too. So you could submerge, like a cured leg of something in a giant vat of honey, and it'll stay.
Oh.
So it is a preservative, but it's not to cover the taste of rot. When things were rotted, they were smart enough not to eat it.
Well, natural selection. Those who were stupid just didn't survive.
Okay, before the show started, you threw something out.
Yeah.
Then in the tease for the show.
Yeah.
Something about oysters.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. I mean, we've all heard the oysters are an aphrodisiac.
Okay, oysters are made up of protein.
Yeah.
And carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And sugars.
Yeah.
And water.
Right.
Okay, and salts. Nothing. There's no Viagra in them. There's none of that in them. But think about when you eat oysters. They're a special treat. Maybe you're out at a really fancy dinner. You're on a date. You probably had some champagne.
Yeah.
So there are lots of other things going on around the oyster consumption process that might lead to those other things.
So it's not a physical phenomenon. It is a sociological one.
Yeah. It's it all has to do with the context. It's contextual.
Contextual. You know, there are more questions I have for you, and there are many more calls to take. And
okay.
Of course, then there's the whole President Trump
of Romania,
business.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder if he has any questions about food.
Do you speak Romanian?
No. Do
all
you?
Right. No, not
well,
at all.
So what?
Does President Trump? Well, we'll find out in a few minutes.
Does he speak English?
We're going to take a break. The snarky Bruce Weinstein is our guest. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free. Handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Warwick Valley Farmers Market, the 24th year of providing locally grown produce and farm fresh food, with 37 family farms and artisan kitchens and bakeries. Open Sundays, warwickvalleyfarmersmarket.org. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tastings Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com.
It's Vox Pop Food Friday on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551, joined today by author Bruce Weinstein. And before we get back to the phones, one more that caught my eye.
Okay.
And this seems like common sense. When baking cookies or cakes, butter should be at room temperature. It always says that, and that's what we do.
Ever since Fanny Farmer recipes have said that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Two sticks of butter at room temperature. The problem is, butter at room temperature, when you beat butter and sugar together. You're creaming the butter and the sugar.
Yeah.
The point of that is to beat air into them, to soften. You are sort of half melting that sugar into the butter, and you're beating air in.
Yeah.
And that air is going to make your cookies a little thicker, a little better. But butter has to be cold to trap air. So the reason that can't happen was that was before the days of big, powerful electric mixers. And maybe there were hand mixers, but hand mixers can't handle a cold stick of butter, but your big stand mixer can. So as long as you're using a big stand mixer, don't take the butter out and make it room temperature. People always say to me when we're at cooking classes, my cookies are always thin, what can I do? Use cold butter.
All right, we have a 2-minute warning here, and we got one yesterday for the press conference, and it was 15 seconds. So let's take a call and hope we get through it.
Okay.
And Ethan in Lakeville, Connecticut, if we have to cut you off, I hope you understand. You're on.
Totally. Hey, last summer, a friend of mine was cooking a steak, and I'm not sure if it was a skirt steak or not, but he said after he took it off the grill, he said let it rest.
Okay, that's good.
For 5 minutes.
Okay, right. Ethan, not a myth. You should let all meat rest before you carve it. When you cook any meat, whether it's a thin skirt steak, a thicker porterhouse, or even a whole turkey, the juices inside that meat superheat. They're boiling away. Think about it. You're cooking that meat to 150, 160 degrees. If you cut it instantly, those juices are going to run everywhere. Letting it rest gives it time to cool down a little bit, and the juices don't instantly run all over the cutting board.
Well, thank you for that call. And while we vamp here for the president and the Romanian president, you guys will be on QVC when?
Yeah, we're going to be on QVC. We don't have the exact date. It's either the very end of September or the very beginning of October.
Yep.
And we're going to be on showing recipes, tasting from the all-time favorite sheet cakes and slab pie book.
Fantastic.
Which we're very excited about.
Yeah. And so I assume we'll be back. I think this may be a quick press conference,
okay.
But if not, how do people find you on the web?
Our website is bruceandmark.com, and our podcast is Cooking with Bruce and Mark, wherever fine podcasts are found.
And if anybody wants to hang on the line, this could be a brief press conference. It could be. We just don't know. And if you're just tuning in, it's Food Friday. And once again, politics have sabotaged an otherwise unpolitical program. We have a press conference coming up. President Trump expected to address... Well, he'll be appearing with Romania's president, and they'll talk about the usual things. And then he is expected to address yesterday's Senate testimony by former FBI Director James Comey. We will take you to that live. If you want to hang on the line, there may or may not be a continuation of our program. In the meantime, Bruce Weinstein, let's do another couple from your book here.
Okay.
Lobsters Scream When You Cook Them and 100 Other Myths About Food and Cooking.
And you know this book is also available as an audiobook.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you get James Earl Jones to do it?
I don't even remember. I don't know the actor's name, but if you want to listen to this book, you can download the audio version.
Fantastic. Zach, we still okay to do Food Friday? Any kind of advice you can... Okay, we're still waiting. All right, very good.
Hey, Ray, do you know this one? Have you ever heard that eating at night makes you fatter?
It's got to be correct, sir.
That if you, and no, it's not.
It has to be
a
correct.
A calorie is a calorie is a calorie. No one has changed, as far as I know, that no one has changed the space-time continuum to make calories you consume at night more fattening than calories you eat earlier in the day.
I mean, there's the whole bit about working off those calories.
You don't work till you were what you didn't work them off during the day. If you eat,
I'm in
only,
radio. Obviously,
if you only eat 2,000 calories a day, it doesn't matter where you eat them. Calories are now the reason. Most people will tend to gain weight by eating at night is that's extra eating. That's not just saying, all right, you know, I'm going to have my dinner, my grilled chicken breast at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
They've already had the lasagna at 6, and now they're going to have a pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, that's not good.
It's not that you're eating at night. It's what you're eating at night.
Page 186, squeeze a peach to see if it's ripe. Do it all the time.
And all you're doing is bruising the peaches in the store.
That's not true.
If you... I have to dig for the peaches. You haven't had your fingers all over. If a fruit doesn't smell sweet and delicious, a peach should smell like a peach. When you walk by that display of peaches, if you don't smell peaches, keep walking.
So you have to pick the peach up to smell it anyway.
But you have to squeeze it. You don't have to squeeze it. And I can't tell you how many times I have had like old ladies in the supermarket look at me and say, oh, disgusting, because I'm putting the peach up to my nose.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you're also why you wash the peaches before you eat them when you get home, because everyone's
because
touched
Bruce
them
and Mark have been there.
And putting them up to their nose.
Yeah.
But fruit, almost all fruit, not all fruit, but almost all fruit is by how it smells.
What about tap a watermelon to see if it's sweet? That's page 189.
Yeah, the watermelon mambo. I don't get it. No, no.
Sure,
no.
Shake
okay.
it.
And what happens when you shake
it? Well, if it sounds like a maraca, you go to the next one.
Okay, watermelons. Next time you're in the store, watermelons are green, but they all have this thing, something called a belly spot.
Yeah.
It's a discoloration on the bottom where it sat on the ground. It's either white or yellow. The bigger the contrast between that belly spot and the green around it, the more ripe that watermelon is. So look for one with a bright yellow belly spot or a bright white one. But if it's sort of green all the way around, it's not ripe.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, I've been doing it wrong all these years.
Yeah, but smell a cantaloupe. Just like the peaches, smell the cantaloupe.
Smell the cantaloupe.
Smell the cantaloupe.
That's the name of your next book. page 144, eating turkey makes you sleepy. Well, of course this is true.
Well,
tryptophan, right?
Yeah, of course. But did you know that edamame, you know, soybeans, have four times the L-tryptophan as turkey? Do you get sleepy after you eat Japanese food?
I don't
you
eat
don't.
Japanese food.
Okay, the thing about Thanksgiving, yeah, we get turkey. We get tired after eating turkey.
Yeah.
But it's because we also ate the stuffing. And we ate more stuffing, and we ate more stuffing, and we ate more bread, and we had two bottles of wine, and you listened to Uncle Herman's story that he's told every year for
right.
the last 6 years, so you fell asleep. It's not the L-tryptophan. It's everything that went with the turkey and your boring family.
All right, let's try to take one more call. And again, Jim and Adams Mass, if we cut you off, it's because the president of Romania is in the house, all right?
All right.
You're on, man.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
All right. Yes, I was calling about... drinking alcoholic beverages mixed with other things like fruit juices or mm-hmm. other things like sodas with sugars in them and all.
Yep.
And I was advised by a fellow I was at a training session with years ago that drinking your alcoholic beverages neat or just with water, you would have less problems with headaches and feeling very lousy the day after mm-hmm. because all these sugary things you mix with, you know, mixed cocktails, these sugars are starting to break down in your system into alcohol or whatever.
So just drink straight alcohol?
A lot of the problems.
Oh, wow. So I love this. So this guy's idea is that the sugar breaks down and turns into alcohol in your system. So in that, with that logic, every time we eat a piece of bubble gum, we should be like getting drunk. So now the thing is, when you do mix things in, when you start mixing anything with your alcohol, and if it's sugary stuff, if it's other alcohol, you are going to not feel so good. It is just the purer you keep it, the better you will feel. That is just
right.
Absolutely.
There has to be more to the equation, because on the occasion, if I have one martini,
mm-hmm.
Ordinarily I would have two.
What size is this one martini?
You know, 6 ounces, let's say. 6 to 8 ounces.
Eight to 10 ounces.
Yeah, right. But if I have one, some days, the next day, I will have a headache and a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I'll have two. I'll be fine the next day. What's up with that? Well, why the variance?
Because that could be completely you, how dehydrated were you.
Yeah.
You know, if hangovers mostly are because you're dehydrated, because
right.
alcohol dehydrates
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if you go into the cocktail hour being dehydrated, that alcohol is going to affect you worse in terms of how you feel. So always have a big glass of water before you start drinking.
That's a really good. And here's another myth.
Which is also why you shouldn't drink on planes, because when you're in airplanes, it's so dry that it's easy to be dehydrated. And so if you drink on planes, you're really not going to feel so good when you land.
This is another book for you guys. You know, okay. Ways to avoid the old hangover. Store coffee beans in the freezer, page 66. Yay or nay?
Do you do that?
No.
Good. Good for you.
No.
You shouldn't.
Just
store
keep
them
it in a sealed, dry
in an airtight container
yeah.
in the cabinet so it's dark. Moisture is the absolute nemesis of coffee beans. Moisture is what pulls the flavor out and how you brew it, right? You
right.
put water with them.
Sure.
So the refrigerator and the freezer could be a very moist environment, hence all that ice that forms around your freezer, or maybe you have a self-thawing one and it runs out. Well, that moisture will get into your beans and will destroy the flavor compounds if you keep them in there.
So how long can you... I think we have...
There's.
Okay, so let's go to President Trump speaking with the President of Romania, ladies and gentlemen.